It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head on a swivel, dude. News has broken. Jason Wright is gone at some point, whether it's the end of the season or if he gets a job before then. But Jason Wright, no longer the team president. Pretty big deal.
Yeah, which we should probably get right into. We will remind everybody that we've got a great prize we've been giving away all week long. Danny's been handing out the caller 10s, the Fugees at Jiffy Lube Live. And we've got another pair for the August 23rd show. We'll give those away today at 4 o'clock out of the Beltway Blitz. But yeah, the Washington Post, just about 30 minutes ago, breaking the story, we can corroborate here at 106.7 The Fan that Jason Wright, who became the face of the Commanders when they tried to transform their workplace culture after he was hired 4 years ago as the first black team president in NFL history, is moving out of that role. And from what I'm told, he will be with the team in as an advisor, but not as the team president for this year. If he gets a gig he likes, wants to leave, they will help him do so. But Danny, it sounds like he's going to be around this football season in a different role, that his run as team president is ending, and that he will then no longer be with the team as of the end of this season. From the Washington Post piece, and this is what you and I were speculating about a couple weeks ago, his contract was set to expire in August. He took over in August, which stands to reason, right, that maybe you sign a four-year deal, that the contract is up. And so, I guess, maybe you sign him to a one-year deal in this new role. Instead of being the team president, you're an advisor. We'll keep you around for this year. You can help transition us into whoever they're going to hire. And they will immediately begin a search for a team president that's going to be led by Tad Brown, who's the chief executive of Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, who runs a lot of Josh Harris's sports ventures. And I've seen him out at the park. Every big day that's happened, every big press conference, he's been there at Josh Harris's side. So he, and I'm sure Harris, already have ideas and people they want to interview. I don't know what that's going to look like in terms of, you know, the team president. Is it someone that's run an NFL team before? Is it going to be someone with, you know, a business background in running clubs? Obviously, even though Jason Wright played in the NFL, Danny, he had no past resume running an organization, and then he took over running one of the pillars in the NFL.
Yeah, so it was an interesting time, a precarious time for him to come in. Basically, tasked with, after the missile hit, right, after all the rubble was there and everything was in flames and it was as bad as an organization could possibly be, hey, man, clean that up. Good luck, right? So he became the face because Dan Snyder had to go into hiding or hang out on his yacht or stand trial or settle lawsuits or a million other things that weren't owning a team.
He didn't have to go home. He just wasn't allowed to be here.
Yeah, you can't hang out in front of us. So Jason Wright became their representative at league meetings, the guy that was the spokesman. I mean, if you think about that, we're just going to stage an informal video in front of one of these stadiums, and we're thinking about a stadium, and Dan Snyder talked for 5 seconds, and Jason Wright said, actually, here's what we're doing, like, just because Dan was going to put his foot in his mouth. And so he became this, you know, larger figure than most team presidents are. It's a big role. It's a big job. But usually it's a, I'm meeting with the guy that might buy a suite, or I'm meeting with Chiniga Mayos, or I'm meeting with AOL, whatever, to talk about sponsorships and things. Not the guy that's out front making every statement, sort of speaking on behalf of the team. So, listen, he was always great to us. Very kind and forthcoming. He's a really nice person, was always kind to me. But a lot of fans, for the stuff that they saw, didn't go well. There's no way around that, right? So the stuff that behind the scenes that we'll never know, that, hey, he increased seat licensing ship by X amount, doesn't do anything for me. The stuff that we saw that were touch points with the fans, there was a lot of negative in there. And that's kind of how people are going to remember it, I think.
Yeah, I think the most public-facing things that mattered the most to his constituents, for lack of a better word, you know, to his consumers, either didn't go well or the perception was that they didn't go seamlessly. I'm thinking about things as big as the rebrand and the name change and the new logo and an entirely new brand that now we're stuck with perhaps in perpetuity, and as small as just individual days at the stadium when you're honoring Sean Taylor, when there was, you know, a snafu and people were upset and all of a sudden now you're retiring Sean Taylor's jersey when that was clearly not the plan, and then his family's taking a picture in front of a porta potty. And those are kind of the worst of, if you will, the lowlights that get put on his ledger. You know, when they're unveiling this big statue is the expectation for the activation for Taylor, and it turned out to be a mannequin from a Dick's Sporting Goods. Like, that couldn't have gone worse, obviously. Does it mean he's bad at his job? No, not necessarily. But when you ask fans about Jason Wright's tenure, they're going to mention the things that they see, the tangible, very public things that were tied to him. And he might have done a whale of a job. They might have had more growth in the last few years in terms of season tickets and business stuff and getting advertisers back. And frankly, that's his real job. Like, that's the thing that matters more. But to the average fan, and certainly to people like you and I on the outside looking in, the public-facing stuff is really what we're going to consider to be your win-loss record. And there were too many gaffes early. I think they cleaned that up with the new ownership group. There have not been those since, which tells you maybe the chaos and the stench of Snyder just made life difficult, but it really didn't matter. It was too late, and sometimes perception is more important than reality. It just seemed like they screwed a lot of things up.
They did. There's no way around that. Sometimes it's up to interpretation. Like, for example, I didn't love that artist rendering of the Sean Taylor jersey thing. It wasn't for me, but somebody, you could go to an art museum and go, that painting's great, and someone could look at the same thing and go, I don't like it. That's eye of the beholder type stuff.
That one's tough, though. You might have to find someone who's a big fan of mannequins at department stores.
Yeah, to me it's a no, like, but maybe somebody that has an advanced art degree could tell me, well, it's abstract and it means this. I have no idea. I'm just trying to offer it. The one that I focused on that nobody seemed to care about that much was the ones with typing errors, the ones with their heroes in jerseys of other teams, or an image where Doug Williams was left-handed for their 100 greatest. If a freshman in high school turned in that report, he would fail. Like, that's a professional football team with the easiest layup that there is, honoring the 100 greatest in some sort of little online dealio to get people excited, and they couldn't do the most basic thing, which is spell check, which is, you know, just have somebody cross-reference. And it was emblematic of
clerical errors.
Yeah,
is what it was.
Of shoddy work, having something be hastily done. And then the biggest one, which we've hit on a bunch, no institutional memory. The people that were going to make these massive changes, and if you were a jerk if you pointed out at the time, didn't have the blood, sweat, and the tears, didn't have the highs, didn't have the lows, didn't have the heartbreak, didn't have the great moments of history with this team. One of the guys, a slick consultant, was here for a year and a half and is like, I oversaw one of the great rebrands in the history of mankind onto the MLS San Diego. Tweet, what? Like, that guy's already gone.
Yeah, well,
a tourist.
Just about everybody involved in the rebrand is gone. And Wright is still here for the moment for this season, but he will be gone, we now know. And so it's almost universal. I mean, you could go person by person, all the videos certainly that we saw, and let's hand Ron Rivera the images and let's look at the mock-ups. Everyone in all of those videos is gone. And this was my biggest gripe from day one. Who is running this rebrand?
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That has a real legitimate stake in this. Not a passerby, you know, not somebody who is going to be here today, gone tomorrow, not a hired gun because they were really good at some law firm or they look great in a suit or because, you know, you need to go find the sharpest that are the easiest to sell at the press conference. Who is the person with the, you know, the burgundy and gold tattoo on their arm that's still here caring? And I remember talking to Jason Wright about this multiple times. And I said to him, I said, man, I think a lot of the mistakes that are being made here are just because you don't have anybody around you who can go, dude, You can't get the Sean Taylor thing wrong. It means something different to this group of people. You have to. This is personal. This is like a, you know, when you, this is going to sound terrible, and I apologize for the analogy, but I think you'll get it. It's like if you go to a funeral and the preacher like says the person's name wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
There is a disrespect and just a get this guy off that stage as fast as possible because I want to punch him in the jaw because he just called my dad Dennis Daniel. Or you know what I mean? Whatever.
Yep.
Like that's kind of what you did with Sean Taylor a little bit. And if you had enough people around you going, hey, this is emotional. This is not a safety that played 4 years. This is different.
Yeah, it's not a player that played here. This is something else.
And I feel that way more than anything else about the rebrand, where it was Ron Rivera. He's a 85 Bear. He's a Carolina Panther. He was here for a couple decent, you know, mediocre, non-playoff type seasons, right? Jason Wright is a sharp guy. My point was always, and maybe I'll be right, maybe I'll be wrong. He could be a senator or do whatever he's going to do in 10 years, but it ain't going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
There just weren't enough people who care. So we're stuck with this thing. You guys came in, you know, we're sitting there, and you drop in and tell us how to rearrange our house and where to put everything and what kind of furniture we need, and then you leave and we're not allowed to do anything for 20 years in this home. No, thank you. That was my annoyance, my aggravation. It's what I thought that group got the most wrong right away. I think they've worked on that some, and they certainly do a better job, you know, now reaching out to some people to bounce things off of them. But also the big difference is, I think, that the new ownership group has some of that institutional knowledge with Harris, with Rails, with mm-hmm. Ein, with lifers in the DMV, and more so than anything else, to quote Ron Rivera, more so than anything else, okay, they're tied to people who care and people who have been here. They can pick up the phone because they are from this area and go, hey, what do you guys think about this? And they, you cut them open, they bleed burgundy and gold. Maybe not to the extent that, you know, someone in Section 317 does. You know, they're businessmen now, and they've gone on to live in other cities or whatever. But it's different and it's better. But we're stuck with this name, this logo, this thing that was given to us by a bunch of people in fancy suits that are coming and going. And that always sat wrong with me.
Yeah, the Hog Ownership Group, one of their first touch points is like Daryl Green retirement, jersey retirement ceremony. Masterfully done, incredible. You know, eyes glistening all over the DMV, right? Totally. Just, it's a different story, to your point. I had as a political science major at the George Washington University, I remember I had a class on the presidency years ago, and the cabinet, and everybody that gets together to advise the president, everybody brings their skill set to the table. But at the end of the day, Department of Defense is going to argue for defense action. State Department's going to argue for diplomacy. Everybody that comes and sits at that meeting brings their thing, and then it's up to the commander-in-chief to weigh the best option. Who was hired? The consultant. A consultant then went into the consulting world and brought other consultants. We shouldn't have been surprised we got consultant behavior. In other words, they're sitting there high-fiving because the activation got, you know, 47,000 retweets. Not all positive. A lot of fans going, what the hell is this? What are we doing? But they're going, activation, synergy, and all these terms that you pay thousands of dollars an hour for to a consulting firm to you know, that you're supposed to be really impressed by.
Who is the guy that you referenced?
Will Middlebrooks. Missilebrooks.
No, Will Middlebrooks played for the Boston Red Sox.
So it's like Middlebrooks, but Missile or something.
I don't know the guy.
Right.
I know everyone in that building. I don't know that guy, okay? Whoever that guy is was here for like 11 seconds.
Seriously.
But he claimed, I remember we looked it up when he left and went to another team,
mm-hmm.
that the rebrand was the greatest rebrand in sports history.
And he had some analytic to prove it that's based on the way consultants operate.
Did he?
My answer to that is no. But secondly, in his mind, probably yes, because that's what he was hired to do. And that was the mistake. Now, I understand you needed that PR ability. You needed someone to navigate the murkiest waters probably in sports history.
Well, that's another thing, right? That I do want to acknowledge, and people will hate this part of it, and that's okay, because I have no problem occasionally being hated, which I think is necessary because people just want to hear what they want to hear. But I think it's our job to point everything out. Jason Wright's job wasn't easy. Wright had a terribly hard job.
Correct.
Working for Dan Snyder is mission impossible. Being a team president at a time during a rebrand, during the COVID season with no fans, during a period where the fan base had cratered, like, that's a bad job.
Yeah, it's a tough task.
Take the job because he got paid, I would imagine, millions of dollars. And frankly, because you're not getting another team president job anywhere else at that point. You'd never really been on the radar as a team president. You kind of came from obscurity to get the gig. I'm not knocking him for taking the job, but it is not an easy job.
No.
That having been said, you call balls and strikes. I think they did a lot of things poorly early on. I think they did some things well to try to get some people back there. Is it a better place to work than it was when he showed up? I would imagine unequivocally, yes. Is it a bigger now season ticket base, and are things about the experience improved? I would say yes and probably to those two things. There's still a lot of work to be done if you talk to season ticket holders. But, you know, it's a glacial pace, if you will. And it's also easy to improve from having been just a utter disaster. They were down to like single-digit thousands of season ticket holders from what I was told. At one point, it was like 9 or 10. I think it was like 8 to 10,000
of like real ones. The guys like, that actually use the tickets, go to the games,
exactly,
not like get them and sell them on StubHub.
Legitimate human being, fan of the team, season ticket holders was the number that I'd heard at one point.
It should be 4 or 5 times that.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So when you're at rock bottom, and then oh by the way, you fire a coach, you hire a new coach, you have an offseason, you draft a quarterback too, like some of the things they've been doing, you should be able to push some tickets and have some growth. They would tell you their metrics show them that they've made some of the most growth in the last few years. Is that because they're going from such a low bar that inevitably, like if your ERA is 10 and now your ERA is 6, you're one of the most improved pitchers in baseball. You still can't get people out. I don't know if it's that or if it's that they're now kicking butt. I know that when this new ownership group initially looked at the books for the first time, they couldn't believe what they saw. Right? I mean, it was like so bad. And there was so much work from a business standpoint. They bought this thing as the layup that is, we're getting into the NFL game. We can't miss. And then you get to look at the books after the purchase for the first time and you go, oh my goodness.
Oh dear God.
This is so much worse than we thought.
Yeah. And again, that doesn't, as you like to say, put the Triscuit crackers in any fan's stomach. They don't care about that. They, you know, would like to have a good game day experience and the team wins sometimes. But the point I was going to make before was they went so consultant and outsider heavy that you got a consultant and outsider heavy process. There was never any balance to that. And that to me was the glaring error. And then it manifested itself in a number of errors. Those public facing, fan touching kind of moments were embarrassments. They were punchlines. They, you know, 2-2-22, probably in their minds right now, they still think of it as a success. In our minds, we're going, what an embarrassing foible-filled letdown that was.
I would love to know that. And maybe there will be a time when, in the future, when he's no longer with the team, we can sit down with Jason and say, 2-2-22, win or loss.
He'll go, we're on the Today Show, man. We're on the Today Show. We're being interviewed live at our stadium on the Today Show. The exposure, global brand, and then use a bunch of words that make you and me feel stupid.
But so that's another point, though, that I think is good, is that view of how to handle that, like national TV, Today Show, right, is what they brought in.
Yeah, that's the consultant.
And it was wrong.
Yep.
Not to say that Jason couldn't have done it another way, but he hired all people that thought that way. That day should not have been about the Today Show. That day should have been about doing something on the mall with thousands of fans around you in seats, right? And doing something to really appeal to your base. Not viewing your brand as global and letting the guy in Belgium know at the same time as Beltsville, you know, what the name of the Commanders was going to be.
Precisely. But again, that was the mentality. That's the thinking. And there's room for that, by the way, to think big, to grow, to engage in all those sorts of things. They never had a seat at the table for people that give a damn about this. That as you you've said very well, and I've said it a million times, I'm going to be here for the next guy too. 17 presidents for now, God willing, I'm still alive and kicking on this planet. I'll still care about the team and that guy will have a different job. That's my point. For every coach, for every guy that comes in and whines about, like, where's my immediate support? Where are people just, retweeting everything I say and applauding me just for existing? Dude, I got too much pain behind me. You know what I mean? I have too much doubt. I have too much skepticism based on decades of seeing a million of you come in here and tell me how different it's going to be.
I gave you your benefit of the doubt to Ron Rivera, Dan.
Yeah.
Sorry, DQ.
You know what I mean?
You want your benefit of the doubt, go look in Rivera's top drawer.
My hope died with Mike Shanahan, and that's 100% a fact. Like, if that guy couldn't fix it, I'm going, it's not fixable. And it wasn't until we had a new owner that now I actually think something's possible again.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.